in the horrible times and still have slack.
Right.
That's the key.
Well, it's easy for
it's
you.
It's not going to get better.
It's a little easier for you and me to say on account of we, well, in your case, you carefully saved your resources and bought a wonderful, incredible farm where you can
hide
from the world.
I looked for a place that nobody wanted to, I thought, where's a state that nobody wants to move to that they would say, what? What are you going to move there for? That's the state I'm going to move to. Which one is it now? And I went through that process.
Well, see, I didn't have to do that because my parents did. And and then they died, and my brother and sister didn't want to live in this maintenance nightmare. They had their own newer houses already.
Yep.
And so here they basically said, well, you can stay in that old rattle trap decaying mansion. It's not really a mansion. It's actually a four-bedroom house, but the living room has a mansion.
It looks kind of like a mansion. It's kind of like, it reminds me of, do you remember that one that had, gosh, what was the name of it? Had William Holden in it and Gloria Swanson, and she played an aging.
Oh, yeah.
Sunset Boulevard.
Right. That's a great movie.
Yeah. In that closing scene when she comes out to get her set up from Mr. DeMille, you know.
Yeah.
Frame is to frame. Yeah. I think they're getting ready to take her off to jail.
Right. Well, yeah, she had a spiral staircase. We have a.
Was that an Otto Preminger movie?
I don't know.
I really liked Otto Preminger movies, I think. I'm going to go look and see who did that movie.
Well,
but anyway,
I'm going to turn off this recording and, you know, then I have to listen back to it. But I'll probably go, man, I thought we were just blithering. And this is actually pretty funny. If you're Philo or Stag.
Yeah. Or
and that's all
people that like to listen to us.
Yeah. So, yeah, anyway.
Which is us.
Yeah. Well, even I'm getting tired of listening to us, man, I'll tell you.
All right. Well, it was fun.
Okay, man. I'll say bye. Yeah, 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 yeah,
yeah. You think it'd take your mind off things if Blackstone showed us a trick?
Well, how about a bit of hypnotism, Alan?
Who's to be the victim?
You are.
Right.
Now, look straight in my eyes. Sideways. That's a cinch.
It isn't as easy as you think, Alan.
It isn't?
Mm-mm.
Ah, just watch. All right. What do I do now? And I'm not hypnotized.
That's right, Alan.
Then you give up? Certainly do.
Well, just try to look into my eyes.
One on top of the other. I wouldn't have a chance.
Right.
Well, for once, you're right, Alan. I hope you like that trick, ladies and gentlemen. And until next time, goodbye.
They told me, you know, we'll give you a day, we'll give you a week, however long it takes for you to accept our help to be healed and to become a child of God and denounce being gay.
Honoring the memory of Dr. Anonymous, coming up on the Rainbow Minute.
I got three quarters of the way through several times and was like, well, I have no idea how this would end, so I have to start over. But one thing I know is I can't end a story without hope.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Nicaragua's NGO Purge targets its oldest queer group. Gay Taiwanese movie sings out a universal love song and upending the artistic process with Amanda Kayback. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Joe Bainline.
And I'm John Dyer V.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending August 28th, 2020.
Informativo Pacifica.
A continuación, Informativo Pacifica.
No te la pierdas.
Because we are the 99%.
And soon to come your way is the Bathrop Spears Broadsides Thursday evening show for September 29th, 2022. Lots of stuff about the destruction of the of another section of the Benchlands encampment, the survival encampment that's been going on for 2 years, and which the city is determined to turn into a grassy field, with mostly people being shoveled into the armory, the overlook, possibly some, I guess I heard this most recently, some, I don't know if you call them dog houses or, they're not really tiny houses, but they're sort of some, I may have called them coffins. They are, you know, they're little wooden structures that are set up in 115 Coral Street that were done during the COVID emergency. As ways of sort of isolating people and also giving them little bits of privacy and so forth, but no insulating in terms of cold and heat. And again, in a very in a somewhat restricted situation. I don't know. I think they're less restricted than the armory. Certainly, they can come and go more as they wish there than at the armory or at the overlook. Anyway, most of this particular show is going to be involved in kind of hearing accounts and descriptions of the destruction of the third cycle of destruction. And the fourth one is coming up next week, as I understand it, on October 5th. That's what Ruth Haney reports from the battlefield, so to speak, where people's homes are just being wantonly destroyed. After they're being told you either move out by noon, and in this case it was noon on the Tuesday, or else you're going to everything you take will be destroyed, and you will be arrested for trespass. Even though that's a violation of the Martin versus Boise federal court decision, since they don't have indoor shelter to put people in, and they don't have shelter for the entire area that they're demolishing, although that's denied, kind of. It's sort of, I was saying, it's inferentially or in denied in passing or sort of elided over by city employees, one of whom I talked to, Jeremy Leonard, who claims that anybody who wanted to get into a drug program or get up to the armory and stay there could, because they were reserving spaces, which some folks have called cop spots, places the police have reserved expressly for the purpose of threatening and destroying encampments elsewhere in the city, which have nothing to do with actual space for the total number of people whose encampments are destroyed, but rather they pose alternatives to people that many of them will not take for different reasons, and but they don't have enough to cover the entire situation, and therefore it's a violation of what the court said some years ago in this Martin versus Boise case. Anyway, that hasn't apparently impressed either the Union of the Homeless or Anthony Prince or the ACLU or, I don't know, eager volunteer litigants to go and sue them and stop them and get a TRO from stopping this. But you never can tell. At some point it might, as people get more and more desperate and realize that not only will the Benchlands encampment be destroyed, every single encampment around Santa Cruz that is outside the very limited facilities that Santa Cruz authorities have set up is going to be under attack using this excuse. And they will have far less in the way of public defense, the way, let's say, the 2000 San Lorenzo campground winter defense happened. Because at that point, there was a massive community response. Of course, it was right after a Black Lives Matter summer, and there was a lot of organization going on. There was a sort that seems to be, I think that's what one activist will talk to you about this claim, just maybe the difference between then and now. Anyway, a lot of that stuff is going to be played today, and probably a few updates, and who knows what else. So tag along, and you'll find out.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So on the day before the demolition of Phase 3, which would be anywhere from the second to the third stairway, if you're looking at the benchlands from the trail that goes from the courthouse to the footbridge, you have to be familiar with the area to know it. It's a segment of 50, 60, maybe more tents, and God knows how many people. I took a walk, not in the best of health, as you can probably still hear. I'm recovering from a very lingering cold and nasty. I don't like it. It's weighing me down and interferes with my delivery, and I cough a lot. But I took a walk there, and this is the account I gave into my little recorder as I walked along. It's about 15 to 11 on September 27th, Monday morning, crossing the footbridge, and I'm about to sort of be right above the San Lorenzo Benchlands campground, looking on both directions. The tents on the Water Street side have now filled up the spaces in the middle, so there is no fire lane. And so what used to be the case throughout the Benchlands existence was tents on the riverside, tents on the court side, and then a space in the middle so people could traverse, they could fire engines if necessary, could go, although there weren't that many fires. There were some, but nothing that spread. And I guess the fire department declined to provide fire equipment for people to use down there, which would have helped. Anyway, that space area was filled with tents, and that was because people in Phase 2 were told, get out, get your stuff by, I think it was noon on the 19th, and or else it might have been the 20th, or else we take everything. I was going to say we steal everything, because it's even worse. We dumpster everything. We treat your possessions, your house, your tent, your survival gear that you could pick up and move as trash. And we destroy it. And we don't allow you to reclaim it, even if nothing else is happening. And that's what happened again in this demolition on Tuesday. But anyway, people moved from the Phase 2 area into the Phase 3 area. So that blocked a lot, because people had their stuff I wouldn't say randomly placed, but desperately placed. And I don't know if you listeners who aren't familiar with the Benchlands can get an understanding of that. But Benchlands is a flat plateau that is a sort of a lower area that people have been living in, which extends for quite a while. It extends from, if you know Santa Cruz, from one bridge all the way to the other, from the Soquel Bridge to the Water Street Bridge, although they tried to limit it, and then they ended up cramming it full of people, they being city authorities and county authorities and Caltrans authorities, cramming it with folks because they claimed this was a sanctioned campground, even though it was outdoors, and doesn't in no way meets the definition of a sanctioned campground, nor even the kind of campground that the court ordered back in March of 2021, when the court created this campground as the kind of the agreement between the Union of the Homeless, who had sued the city and gotten a restraining order that stopped them from demolishing and evicting people from the upper area near the duck pond and the sports courts and the grasslands and the children's playground, although I don't think anybody camped in the children's playground. And I never heard any complaints other than the usual paranoia and apprehension about the children's playground being not usable. Although people probably, because of their preferences and their fears, may have steered clear. I haven't heard of any, heard of no untoward incidents. I don't hear everything, obviously. I don't keep as much tuned to keeping it real, the Facebook page that kind of highlights any homeless transgressions or transgressions it likes to pin on homeless people as it urges the authorities to eliminate them from the public view and from the public scene. So anyway, here's more of this Monday account. And it's looking pretty cluttered. We're talking two and three tents looking toward Water Street on the ocean or the riverside. And then four tents abreast on the county building side. Various encampments have just piles of debris. It's not clear how debris accumulators or collectors can get in and dispose of them, although there are, I count one, two, three, I count four trash cans maybe. And this was a concern of folks living in the encampment that several weeks before trash pickups had stopped, and they claimed that this was might have been a deliberate and continued policy to disperse people and encourage people to leave. I heard different accounts about it. I'm not clear about how accurate that assessment was or even the account of it actually happening. But I did notice that I wondered how this could all be cleared away. I guess I wondered how normal life in the encampment could happen where people could dispose of their trash and someone could come in through the middle lane and pick it up from the various encampments. As if you imagine, oh, I don't know, 400 houses all on, or three or 400 houses, or houses serving that many people, and then going through stuff that they couldn't refrigerate, for instance, in a period of several days, and seeing how much trash would accumulate, and then not having any way to pick it up because it's all blocked because of the new brainstorm of city mangler Matt Huffaker. That's the city manager who I disparagingly describe, or perhaps accurately describe, as to how he's mangling the lives of homeless folks while putting out a bold exterior that he's somehow helping them, or at least certainly helping to reseed the benchlands with grass. Anyway, let's hear some more. On the Water Street side, and over on this side, there's more of a pathway, but it's looks like folks being overwhelmed by their stuff or by garbage. There's a great significant number of porta-potties on the path between the county building and the footbridge. Still shield or wall off the grass area, which is being looks like it's being replenished. And the porta-potties, once they began the demolition, starting at Water Street and the so-called Phase 1, where the porta-potties and the wash stations and the trash containers were located initially, or through much of the period where people lived there, They were all moved up to the path, which is you traverse when you walk from the footbridge to the county building, which makes it, of course, harder for people in the night to go take a dump or take a leak. And it's, I mean, you have to climb up an incline in the dark. So it's not, I just mention it because that's an example of the city's obliviousness to the living needs of hundreds of people. Porta potties, I'm counting them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Hey there, you pooch. 6, 7 without a door. 8, 9, 10, 11. And I count 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 wash stations. Porta potties look in, I don't know, I'm used to indoor plumbing, but kind of wretched state. I'm forced into this campground to cram up, double, triple up in tent area instead of allowing the encampment to expand or creating satellite encampments. Howdy, man. It's a kind of forced concentration. And here we see the fence, which is, I guess, this is a fence demarcating phase 3. Howdy.
Hey, how are you, Mike?
Good. This is situated at the third stairway. And I think this is the fence that indicates the area between phase 2 and phase 3. That has got to be, or that is being threatened with demolition. And that's clumsily put. That was phase 3. I was looking at the area between the second stairway and the third stairway. Is that right? See, first and second. Between the second and the third stairway was the phase 3 area, and that's what they demolished on Tuesday. Next week, on Tuesday noon. Fence, and there is no first fence anymore. It looks like it's been removed. Next to the second stairway down, which is the stairway that extends from the employees' parking area at the edge of the county building, between the county building and the what we should call it, the lawn bowling place. Number of tents that are in this area between the second and the third fence. Again, as I said, there is no first fence. It's been removed. Everything from the second fence on has been moved. All the tents have been removed from that area. And there's all this sort of a barren ground. And I'm talking about the areas in the first and the second phases, which were, they're doing this, as I said, by phases so they can, I presume, so they can make the claim that the city, that is, city authorities, can make the claim that they have shelter for people. And so people, if they actually did choose to say, I'm going to stay here, you can arrest me, those arrests would stand up in court, and they could proceed to arrest people and demolish. In practice, in the phase 1, 2, and 3 demolitions, people have almost without exception moved. I think there was one arrest in phase 3 last Tuesday, a guy called Jorge. He wasn't really determined to stay. He just was, he needed to take more time to move his stuff. And to give the police, I don't want to give them credit because I don't think that's warranted. They did allow an additional 45 minutes beyond the noon deadline. But they, when he said he just needed some more time and he was sitting on his bench and they said, this bench is trash. You'll hear an activist talk about the account she heard from him, and I'm relaying her account now. They arrested him and jailed him for trespass. I think they released him later. But, you know, trespass is a misdemeanor. Yeah, they can charge it and screw up your record and so forth. The point, though, is that people are not doing the kind of resistance that was done in other encampments elsewhere in the state. And also, the community is not doing the resistance that it did in December. So it's a different scene here at the moment. Although there are still, I would say, probably several hundred people still in the benchlands. And so that, you know, things could go any which way. But again, they, I guess the city may believe this salami tactic of slicing one segment off after another, one at a time, is the best way to sort of keep people inactive and non-resistant, and persuade people that they can, oh, you can always go deeper until, of course, there's nowhere deeper to go. Well, you can always flee somewhere else until you realize that if you flee somewhere else, you're going to be picked off far more easily individually. Although, I guess you might say it's going to be harder for the police to round everybody up once they're scattered. Although, and maybe there is the hope, and this is what Brent Adams has suggested, that that a lot of these people are simply daytime campers, they're drug dealers, they're people who are come for the drugs, hard drugs. They aren't really the needy, worthy, traditional Santa Cruz homeless. But the city has done no survey to really demonstrate or to examine the origins of the people in the benchlands, how many of them are from Santa Cruz, how many of them have been here for a fairly long time, how many, what they were made homeless, for what reason, things of that sort. And also the specifics about the shelter and where they're likely to go if they are evicted. None of that has been done either by the Union of the Homeless, by the other organizations like HUF, the group I work with, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. We've been too busy chattering away at our meetings about other things, I guess, or just haven't gotten to it. It's an undertaking. You'd have to have a team of canvassers go around to do that, at least a few people. I think Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs did go around with a volunteer to count the number of people that were there before the first phase one happened. So that did happen. Anyway, here's the last of this sort of pre-sweep. The time before the phase three sweep, the day before final look-see. Some litter on it, though not piles of litter, really. And that sort of a dumpster, large dumpster there. And it's completely fenced off. And there are some city workers in yellow who are picking up trash right next to the path where it intersects the fence and the second stairway down. This is also the stairway that has the disabled ramp that goes down as well. Counting the number of tents, so 60 or 65 tents. Morning. And this is the number of tents inside the Phase 3 area that were there on Monday, the Monday before the Tuesday demolition. I keep thinking I recognize people, particularly if they're African-American, but I'm not sure. It looks like there are no tents on the area leading between the fence and the as-yet-unfenced area of the campground. Howdy. And what I mean by that is some people, when they were driven out of Phase 1 or when they were simply driven from other encampments like Hell's Trail into the benchlands, started putting their tents on the inclined area between the path between the footbridge and the county building and the benchlands itself, that sloped area. And that was, part of that was fenced off, kind of, and it was, I think it was fenced off anyway. And it that was eventually, by the time I reached there on Monday, there were no tents in that area. They were just all inside the benchlands. Apparently, police are giving orders. People are behaving and just sort of obeying their own, the demolition of their homes. That's sort of standard stuff for people who are faced, yes, with armed gunmen and guys with badges, uniforms, radios, and, amiable smiles or whatever, but it's kind of sad to watch. I'm not sure what I would do under these circumstances. I might do exactly the same. And let's now take a musical break before we dive into more of the city's get lost, get out, or get arrested approach. So the lyrics of this Dave Lippmann song are a little hard to hear, so I'm going to lay them out for you. This one is called More Dead and Gaza Moans, and also known as Four Dead in Jericho. These are the lyrics. Bulldozers and troops are coming. Apartheid has really grown. While Westerners' hearts are numbing, four dead in Jericho. Got to get down to it. Settlements taken our town. Should have been stopped long ago. What if you knew it, knew us, and saw them blow up our homes? How can you sing when you know? As you may have heard, I'm missing some of the lyrics. I'm going to give you the rest of them now. Jet fighters and billions coming. Palestinians on their own. They're losing their land and water. Israelis now must atone. Got to get down with it. Indigenous people must live. Uprooting their lives, uprooting their trees is a crime. What if you lived in an open-air prison like us? How could you sing when you know? So I just returned from a Huff meeting, the Thursday meeting that we regularly have at the Sub Rosa from 11 to 1 approximately, or 10:45 if we're lucky. And I got some contradictory information or some slightly muddled information about the next phase 4 of demolition of another segment of the Benchlands survival encampment, and that it was to be not Wednesday the 5th, noon deadline, but Tuesday the 4th, noon deadline. And I don't know which of these dates is correct, so I'm going to kind of keep sniffing around, try to get more accurate sources, and give you more information if I get back to you on Sunday, which I usually do, and I may well again. So that's just the latest, and I'm going to kind of mention this occasionally through the netcast, because I think it was my understanding it was the 5th. But now I'm getting information that it might have been, might be the 4th. That came from the Huff meeting, and I think it came from mainstream news media, which may be not the best place to go, but who knows what's actually happening. Not me, anyway, at the moment. So on Monday morning, I was awakened from my my beauty sleep, somewhat under the weather, when I got this call from Keith McHenry, which announced what was cooking in the Benchlands. Today is September 27th. It's around 7, and this is Keith McHenry on the phone from, are you at Phase 3 Deadland Camp or whatever?
Yeah, we're at the Benchlands, and it's real packed in there. And they've started putting more permanent fence poles along the part they've cleared. And so it looks like they're getting ready to try to seal that off. And
I was there this afternoon.
Nobody's actually moving or doing anything, really.
Is anybody set up a tent, as was discussed, I guess, at the Friday meeting?
Well, we've all just arrived here, so we haven't done anything, so we don't know what's happening. We're waiting for the rest of the people to come.
And actually, again, I guess I'm speaking myself a lot in this netcast, but this is 7 o'clock the day before the Tuesday deadline in the evening when there were plans or there was some possibility of setting up an overnight camp to then encourage community members to come down on Tuesday morning, the next morning. This is Keith at 7 o'clock in the evening at the encampment, and apparently not too many people showed.
So,
well, I'm there in spirit, keeping in mind I'm just a little under the weather, so I'm kind of counting on you to be sick instead of me. Hopefully that won't happen either. But.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what we're out here now, hanging out.
What kind of, is there any much response from the folks who are in the phase 4, 5, and 6 in parts of the encampment?
No conversation or anything. I mean, it looks like there's a lot of people here and no movement.
Has
a little movement. I don't know. Here's one thing coming in a cart.
Hmm.
So I guess that's it. One family is trying to move out.
How many people are with you to at least be talk about setting up an encampment?
Well, right now it's just me, Angel, and Sky, but Greg was here, and then a bunch of other people were here talking, but they all just left. Yes, I don't know what this.
Did you bring vegetarian hot dogs, perhaps?
Oh, no, I didn't bring any food here. I've been overwhelmed with putting up bombs all day.
Now, when I visited the Benchlands earlier today, because I was going to a doctor's appointment, I noticed that it was, I think they'd set up the phase 4 fence. That is to say the...
Yeah, there's a bunch of fences. Yeah, there's one, the one that's between what they already did and, the rest of the camp, and then there's another fence that goes halfway through the middle of that. And I haven't seen if they put any more further down, but it seems like people are essentially just keep moving further towards Rancho Forte Creek. That's it.
Any reports on where people, those who have left the Benchlands, have gone?
Well, very few people have left the Benchlands, but people that have are back because they were kicked out of where they were.
And how many people do you have actual reports of that happening to?
Three or four people so far.
Uh-huh. And how many people have you heard have actually stayed in the armory or the golf lands or whatever they're called, the overlook?
I don't know of anybody that actually went there. I know that some of the, like Greg and some of the other leaders of the camp, they offered them a storage, like a tiny house over at Housing Matters. And then they're telling them they're going to give them housing, but they, all of them have reported that they don't believe that was actually real. It's just, once they got there and set up inside the little place, they were just, it was clear it was just a scam.
Have you heard any reactions to the Brett Adams announcing that he's closing numerous services because of, it's not entirely clear why, but I assume he's just overwhelmed.
He didn't have any money is one thing, and from what I've read, the city didn't help him financially, and secondly, the building is going to be bulldozed that he's at, and he never found another place to move to, and didn't have the resources to that place. I guess it was super cheap, and he can't afford to move to any other place.
Yep.
So that's
were showers still being provided by Brent to the Benchlands, or did that end too?
That actually was not, that was actually an association of the communities, and the last one I'm aware of was on Friday, and as was the shower at, you know, Felker Street was the Association of Faith Communities trailer, you know, showers, but I don't know what's happening with that. But on Dakota, there was a red band on the meetings that gave the time of, you know, sometime every Friday in the morning. But I don't know if they were here this Friday.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't know.
Now, you mentioned in a previous interview we had that you attempted to hear what the, or see what the folks in the community, I don't know what they call them, the city's liaison modular unit that is sitting in front of...
Yeah, I've never seen anybody there still, and it's still there.
And have you been down at their 10 o'clock time and actually...
I haven't been there. I've been there in the mornings. I stopped trying to be there at a specific time. And it seems like what the... Basically, Jeremy's going through with and trying to get the people that are the most lucid and most likely to organize in the camp places to get rid of them. So that seems to be the strategy.
Has he been successful?
I don't know. The people haven't really ultimately totally left that he's given space to, but some have, but most have. Are just taking, you know. So there's two people here that I just talked to who got like a tiny house over at, but they're actually keeping a lot of their property here. And they're considering the in the one case, he's considering the tiny home just storage and access to the shower that's over there, stuff like that. But apparently, like at Housing Matters in the little tiny houses, which there's 45 of them. 25 people, but I think the people already were in them anywhere, you know, it's that kind of thing where people get kicked out and more people come in and that kind of stuff, just sort of like the way they did the, you know, so the people that, they're trying to put, it looks like the organizers are the people that might organize resistance there, and then they can come and go as they want. It's like, you know, they don't have to, I guess you'd be, they said they could be there 24 hours, you know, come and go 24 hours a day. But then the problem up at the other space, a lot of people are upset about that because they can't, you know, they basically have to stay there 12 hours a day.
Now the other, which space, can you clarify which space
that was
is which?
Like the, you know, the overlook, as they're calling it, or the armory.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's happening. Yeah.
Now, the guy who was putting out the free services guide, I think you mentioned him.
That's Evan Morrison, yeah.
Any comments on his role in this demolition situation?
He's not visible here, and he doesn't appear to be in any way connected to this particular operation.
Uh-huh.
The people are basically the cops and whatever the private company is that's involved in cleaning it up, and Jeremy Leonard and Chris from Salvation Army are essentially the people that are here. It's mostly just Jeremy Leonard and Chris, whose last name I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
They're the main people that are, that if they do, anybody does come here, are them. And then of course the cops when they clear everything out.
Now in the past, Parks and Rec was kind of made a subsection or part of it by Andy Mills of his, you know, downtown, I call them goon squads, but I guess he would say policing units, whatever. But then I guess that was budgeted away. Have you heard any reports about Parks and Rec increasing their enforcement activities in Poganip and elsewhere?
Not like there's any specific information. Most recent thing I heard about an hour ago was that there's a huge campaign to get rid of the people at Arena Gulch that's on nextdoor.com, but the people are not, yeah, their cops are busy over here kicking these people out. It's going to take until they got everybody out of the Benchlands before they can start attacking one other city, other areas of town.
Hey, how's it going? Okay, not too bad.
Any reports on...
They're just taking everybody into the streets, basically.
Any reports on RV action after
I'm sorry, 1 second, Robert.
Sure.
But because nobody will allow anybody to have... So when the land... That idea was brought up by Drew Glover. That's the main reason why they got rid of him. But you can't be having people go anywhere in the United States. It's just basically every city does this right now. So they're building like a 36 unit place in SoCal. Yeah, and that's proposed, but the effort and the people will be inside of a house with a toilet and shower and everything, plus services on the first floor and all that. Yeah, but they're trying to stop it. The neighbors are trying to stop it. Yeah, so that's basically the problem everywhere. Is that there's, and they had 2 years between for these people. On the Poconip, yeah, they won't let these... So they put people go up there and then they just kick them out. Yeah. I mean, I'm really concerned that they're going to start interning people. Because there's 3.8 million families that are expected to be evicted in October, right? And those people have to go somewhere. And if they're just going to kick them out into the streets too. Yeah. And their hatred. Well, look at what they just, they put this on the, don't touch the tape, because we're going to maybe get fingerprints off of it. I'm on the Food Not Bombs trailer one night when we're parked over on Morris Street. And then there's others that are telling.
So, Keith, can I ask you another question? How are you doing?
Yeah, okay, great.
Harvey West, you mentioned in the past.
Huh?
You mentioned that Harvey West in the past...
I'm just going to keep it, and I'm taking pictures of it, and I get the chance to get fingerprints off it, but I've got the other ones, too. There's other ones that say, tell Keith to go to hell. And yeah, just the normal stuff. Hey, take care. Bye-bye. So, yeah. What was your question?
You mentioned in an earlier net interview that... Harvey West, some folks had gone to Harvey West as a sort of an alternative to the...
Yeah, they were kicked out immediately. Yeah, and they're back over... some of them went further up into the Poconip. Yeah. They haven't been kicked out of the Poconip yet, but it's expected that will happen soon. Yeah.
Have you heard any reports of RV harassment after the Coastal Commission's decision saying, I can't do that?
No, I'm sure that's happening, but I don't know that no one's said anything to me.
Any sign of the organizations like Love Boat or Democratic Socialists who were instrumental in, or part of anyway, the resistance to the Duck Pond 2020 resistance to eviction? But
yeah, no, I'm not seeing them around here, no.
And Nomad has kind of gone nomadic and that sort of thing.
Yeah, there's been a bunch of random people coming here trying to move, help people move. It went during the, like in the morning, I suspect there'll be a bunch of people here I'm hoping some people will be here to try to help people move when that happens. Although it's unclear what the actual rules are, is the flyer itself, it just says Tuesday or whatever, tomorrow is 27th, but it doesn't have any time like it did in other things.
Have they posted?
How are you doing, Blue? Are you still up in the where you were? No, you ended up in at those little tiny houses? Wow. That's great. A trailer? Where? Oh, you're on the street at Harvey West? Somebody gave you a trailer? Who gave that to you? Wow, that's great. I hope they don't tow it. Wow. That's great. You got a disabled sticker on it? That's great. How'd you get it? Wow, that's beautiful. That's great, man. That's so cool. That's so cool. They haven't gotten here yet. Yeah, I think everyone's going to try to be here around 7. Yeah. So that's what's going on.
So do you intend to stay the night yourself, Keith?
No, I'm fried.
I got you.
Yeah, I barely got it.
Now at the meeting where this was sort of discussed and I suppose proposed as a plan, did there seem to be any firm commitments for people, or was it all pretty much we'll see how it goes?
There wasn't, it's not clear we just did put this together too quickly. So yeah, it wasn't. Really, we should have been thinking of this, if this strategy was going to be one that was going to work. We should have been planning it for weeks. But, you know, the thing is, it's just so frightening. It looks like basically everybody's just going to be pushed out into streets and doorways and stuff, and we'll see how the city goes. We're trying to, and the HOU says that they said, well, we're really interested in what's going on, but we don't have any lawyers anymore. Whatever Bob was that was going to help us is gone, and that's not happening anymore. Not Bob, the local Bob, but whoever it was from.
And the ACLU is not interested, I guess. Huh?
Yeah. I mean, they're interested in what we're doing, but they're not interested in doing that.
And the heads of the Union of the Homeless aren't interested in filing in pro per or anything of that kind.
Well, we keep discussing it, but, there's no way I can do it to the amount of other crises that are occurring that are keeping me busy all day, every day.
I see.
So I've been trying to get Alicia to work on it. I did a rough draft to her, but we haven't gotten anywhere with that, unfortunately.
I got you.
Yeah, we're just, because now the number of people speaking with us is skyrocketing. The whole thing has got out of control.
Has Elise showed up?
Not yet, no, but we did talk.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let me get this other one. This line, unfortunately. Okay, I better go.
All right, listen. Thanks, Keith.
No, I'm done now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I tell a tale to all.
And that was Peter, Paul, and Mary, If I Were Free, from the album See What Tomorrow Brings. And I missed some of the lyrics, even though the harmonies were great. So I'm going to read you the lyrics. If I were free to speak my mind, I'd tell a tale to all mankind of how the flowers do bloom and fade, of how we've fought and how we've paid. This weary world has had its fill of words of war on every hill. The time has come for peaceful days and peaceful men of peaceful ways. When all mankind has ceased to fight, I'll raise my head in thanks each night for this rich earth and all it means, for golden days and peaceful dreams. So I was huddling at home while the folks in the Benchlands Phase 3, the residents there, were scuttling, scurrying, or staring and stumbling to remove their stuff, some of it taking it deeper into Phase 4, very few taking the armory option, and others going elsewhere. And there were very few people down there helping, but two of them who were there initially at 7 and then again at noon were Laura Chatham and Otter from the Food Not Bombs kitchen. He cooks for folks every day, or many days anyway, or a number of days. And they were there documenting what went down, and they gave me a call between 10 and 11, I think it was, on the Tuesday deadline day of the... I guess it was the 27th. I'm on the line with Laura Chatham, who is down at the Phase 3 demolition site, or near it, in the Benchlands in San Lorenzo Park. Today is the 27th, and it's about 10 o'clock. And Laura, how long have you been down in the Benchlands today?
Well, I got here with Otter. We were here about... 7. We were here ahead of 7, and then nothing was happening except they were putting up more fence around the north end of the park. So the fence has gone up, and the city is like bulldozing stuff over there from the part that they swept a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Now Phase 1 and Phase 2 near Water Street.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And now I think they're doing... Is this Phase 3?
Phase 3, yeah.
To get people that are just north of the footbridge?
Well, they are. There are a lot of people get north of the footbridge that they aren't getting yet. I think it's everybody who is north of the third stairway down, is how I figured it when I walked there a couple days ago.
Uh-huh.
In other words, the first stairway was their original Phase 1. The second one with the disabled ramp was their second Phase 2 up to there. And now the third one is the third stairway. And I presume they may do it by stairways. I don't know if there's another stairway down. Although I don't know how Phase 4 will extend all the way back to the footbridge. But I think that would be a lot of people to take.
Yes.
I put in a Public Records Act request asking for the specifics about how many people got into shelter, how many people stayed there, how many people have been released from the shelters. And, of course, I'm not expecting to get a prompt response, but they obviously cannot accommodate anywhere near the number of people that are there. So they have to pretend they can, you know, they can play the old shell game in some way. But if we get the documentation out, the idea is to change the narrative and also to stop future attacks on other encampments that are forming, you know, where, you know, in other places in the city. Because if they haven't got shelter, then people, in theory, if they had the legal tools, as you and I have been saying, or you particularly, for the last 2 years, they can use a Martin versus Boise defense if they know how to do it. And there are some people who do, even homeless activists who aren't legal, who've done so up in the Bay Area, up in our North Bay, in Petaluma. And I think Chico began with a non-attorney, or at least one of those cities did that. But Petaluma was initiated by homeless folks themselves. I think Robbie Powelson assisted them, the Sausalito homeless activist. So,
and I think that they say that they were going to, Alicia and Keith were going to do some legal action.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Alicia hasn't been seen much of. Keith.
Oh, I haven't seen either of them this morning. Hey, do you, standing here with Otter, do you want to talk to, he might know more about where people are going, and I think he knows more than I do.
Sure, that's fine, but okay. And anything else you've seen you want to say that you, in the last couple hours struck you?
Well, they seem to, I took a few, like a little video to watch the police come in, which they did, you know, about 20 minutes ago. But let me give the phone to Otter because he's got something to say about where people are going.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Laura.
Mr. Norris, how are you doing?
Ah, the Otter Man. Have you been cooking lately? What's going on?
I've been cooking for the folks at the 1220 River Street campsite.
Well, when do you invite me for chicken dinner is what I want to know.
I don't do meat, but...
Vegetarian chicken, perhaps?
Vegetarian. Yes, the chicken was a vegetarian.
Indeed, good point. So you've been there since...
Same with the cow.
Moo. So you've been there since 7 o'clock?
Before 7, yeah.
Now, did you stay the night?
No.
And do you know, did anybody...
We were looking for Freedom Sleepers, but...
You didn't see any.
Didn't see any. Were they... Where they were said to be, but...
Yeah, no, I know there was... I guess Keith showed up at 7 last night, and... But he said when he was there, he didn't see anybody with tents, and I didn't hear anything more after that. Have you noticed, are tents disappearing in the Phase 3 area? Are people leaving? What's going on in the Phase 3 area?
Some people are leaving. None of the tents have been moved.
How many tents?
The cops are actually being cordial.
Good. How many cops?
Maybe a dozen.
And are these all from Santa Cruz Police?
Yes.
And do you notice, has anybody told you they're actually taking the shelter offers that Jeremy Leonard and others say are being put forward to people as options?
Yeah, some are taking it. There's a little available space up at the armory.
Have you?
Chris Monteith and Jeremy are thinking about opening up more camps.
Thinking about it, or actually have the resources?
They're thinking about it. I threw my 2 cents in and said about a separate camp for seniors. And they thought that was a brilliant idea.
Do they have options to do it, or are they just...
They have options, yeah.
Where would such a camp open up?
Hopefully out of a floodplain.
No, I mean, has the city offered...
I think, you know, polo field up at the Poganip...
Has the city offered them use of the polo field?
Well, they offered the Homeless Garden Project use
of
the field.
But not necessarily the shelter people.
Yeah, yeah.
So are you up at the armory yourself, or are you at 1220?
No, I'm at 1220 River.
How is 1220?
Good. It's a clean camp, as in less spill. It's all self-organized, and people get along.
How long have you been there?
2 months.
Has it changed much in that period of time?
No.
And you can walk in and out?
Yeah.
You can
freely. Yeah.
And you can receive visitors?
Yeah.
How many people have actually...
The visitors was between 8 and 10.
Okay.
There's about 40 people.
8 a.m. to 10 p.m.?
Yeah.
And have you... is it pretty much privacy in your own tent is what you do?
Yes. Yeah.
How many people have actually gone on to actual housing or a substantially better indoor situation from?
Maybe two or three a week.
Two or three a week. And
yeah.
The capacity of the camp is what, about 30?
40, thereabouts.
40. And how many vacancies are there?
Maybe three.
And how many, and who makes the decisions regarding eligibility for the vacancies?
That'd be Monteith and the other person.
Jeremy Leonard?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. How?
That's up to them.
Is there very much monitoring of the camp by any kind of?
None at all.
Oh, that's good. And is there any internal camp organization? I mean, how are people, you know, in touch with each other much?
Yeah, friendship, like good neighbors and stuff like that. You know?
Do you have access?
People actually get along.
And you have access to a refrigerator?
Some people have low amperage appliances like that.
Mm-hmm.
Each tent, like my tent, has electricity.
And you're in a single-person tent, right?
No, it's not a single-person tent. The size of the tents are six-person tents.
Oh, really?
Huh. Yeah, so they're pretty big. They're like 8x8, and the ceiling's about 8 feet, so...
So they're about
they're
seven...
Called, they're, if you want to look it up, they're called Easy Up Cubes.
Uh-huh. Are there are these? So these are there are seven of these large tents in which six people are in each of the tents.
No, just one.
Oh, just one.
There are a couple.
They're a bunch of smaller tents as well.
No, they're all camping cubes by Easy Up. They're all 8x8 foot tents.
Huh, and they all accommodate what, one person?
Yeah, unless if you're a couple.
I got you.
Yeah.
What's the average stay of people there, as far as you know?
1 year. You're allowed 1 year.
Uh-huh.
Unless if you mess up, then you're asked to leave.
How many people have been evicted during your 2 year or 10 year? I mean, your 2 months.
Only one that I know of.
Uh-huh.
And he's in the process of moving. Or trying to move.
Have you had much connection with people in the Benchlands?
That's where we're at now. Not much connection.
Have you? Do you ever visit people down there? Do you know people there?
Christina, but I haven't seen her in a coon's age.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
How close are you? Are you actually in the Phase 3 area itself right now?
Yes.
And what kind of...
We're like 50 feet from the pedestrian bridge.
Okay, and that is... But you are actually on the ground in the Benchlands itself, not on the footpath.
Yeah.
How many people would you estimate are in the Benchlands at the moment? By the Benchlands, Phase 3 of the Benchlands.
Area?
Yeah.
About 100, maybe more.
And do they? What's the general feeling there? Have you got any sense of it?
I think a lot of people are going to leave. They have until noon, and then they'll be ticketed for trespassing.
Mm-hmm. Has anybody declared they're staying?
Yes.
How many would you say?
Just a couple people said that they're going to try to stay, but...
What's your estimate of the number? What do you estimate the number of people who... Well, first of all, who say that they want to stay, and then your evaluation of how likely that is to happen?
For them to stay, they would have to go to the Phase 4 area.
I see.
Which some are, and that's going to get really crowded.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's kind of like cramming rats in a cage, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Are there any members of the community down there trying to assist people or watching or are documenting anything like that?
Laura and I have a phone.
Yeah, I know, and that's great.
So far, the police are being cordial.
Any other members of the community?
I'm not sure.
What made you decide you wanted to come down today, Otter?
She observe what the city employees are doing.
They good. Anybody going around offering people transportation to shelter?
Yes. There is transportation going up to the armory.
And who is offering that at this point? I mean, is somebody walking?
One of the armory shuttle drivers and Chris Monteith and Jeremy.
And they're actually on the site right now?
Somewhere.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Wow. How long do you intend to stay?
Maybe around up until noon or maybe a little after.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Have you been present, Otter, at other sweeps that have happened in the last few years?
Yeah. Yeah.
How does
some of the suites were horrific?
Right.
Where the police will come in and just either burn or destroy campsites, even though the people are sleeping in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
Some were wearing questionable uniforms. Like they could have been people.
Vigilantes?
Yeah, like Take Back Santa Cruz.
When was the last sweep that you were observed that where you saw this kind of thing happen?
That was before Martin versus Boise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Since then, police have calm down a little, you know.
Where do you think folks are mainly going to? Because obviously you're estimating, how many people you're estimating are in phase three? Did you say 100? I don't recall.
That's just a rough estimate. Because
what percentage would you say are going up to the armory? Comfortably situated in my room. I'm playing sick here with a kind of a I've had this wheezy cough and cold, but no fever for the last week and a half.
How you doing?
And I'm off to the doctor this afternoon, but I'm probably going to come and check it out.
Robert.
Hi, who is it?
I got to get off the phone to record things.
Oh, please, go do that. Is this Laura's phone or yours?
It's Laura's.
All right, well, can you tell Laura I'll be calling her back or maybe even showing up?
Well, here she is.
All right, well, thank you, Otter.
Hey, Robert.
Hey, Laura. So Otter tells me there's 100 people in that Phase 3 area. Does that seem like an accurate? Does that mess with your that what you've got too in your assessment?
Well, you know, I really have no idea. I think that Otter probably knows better than I do. But what I do see happening is there's two fences. I've started to see that between the fence in the north, and then there's a fence halfway, and people are actively trying to take their stuff from the phase three into the phase four. So right now there's like a whole bunch of people going back and forth with like carts and bikes loaded up with stuff and moving it up to closer to the pedestrian bridge.
Otter tells me that there are some people like Jeremy and Chris who are, or maybe the armory driver, that are trying, they're helping to transport people up to the armory or offering that or persuading that or something to that effect. Are you seeing much of that?
I haven't seen them doing that. What I see is there's a, what, like a bulldozer over on the, working in what probably was phase two that they cleared already. And the bulldozer is just like digging up garbage and dirt over there, over on the other side of that fence. And then people between, you know, in the phase three are just like there's a bunch of cops standing around. There's, I think I can see about half a dozen from where I'm standing. And then people are just trying to take what, you know, the good stuff that they have in their tents away from the fence that they put up.
And beyond the other fence.
Yeah, they're just trying to get it, you know, I think they're just trying to save what they can.
Is the major movement you see into phase four, or is it out of the benchlands entirely?
All I see, all I can see is people moving into phase four. It does look like, you know, but I can see some people walking up the steps out of the benchlands with not very much stuff. Like, you know, I see a woman with a backpack. I see a guy with a bicycle, you know, and a backpack. And, you know, people don't, I just don't see anybody offering any, you know, help to go up to the armory at this point. But if I walk around a little bit, maybe I'll be able to see. And yeah, we're gonna go up. I'm gonna hang up and I'll call you back when I see something.
That sounds good. One last question: if you look back on the last 3 hours, because you've been there for 3 hours, would you say that your assessment is generally people either staying put, moving into phase four, or going up to the armory, or leaving the benchlands? How would you portion that?
What I've seen the most of are people moving into phase four.
I gotcha. And now I'll let you go, and I'll try to get back to you, and thank you for being available, Laura.
Okay, and I will try and see if I can have anything else to tell you.
I'm sure you will.
Okay.
Thank you, Ed.
See you, bye.
Bye-bye.
Because all men are brothers, wherever men may be, one union shall unite us forever proud and free. No tyrant shall defeat us, no nation strike us down. All men who toil shall greet us, the whole wide world around. My brothers are all others, forever hand in hand, where chimes the bell of freedom, there is my native land. My brother's tears are my tears.
bowed. Let slavery's chains be broken, the whole wide world around.
And that one was another one from See What Tomorrow Brings, from Peter, Paul, and Mary. They call it Because All Men Are Brothers. I suppose women get some kind of mention in there somewhere, but not in that particular decade, I guess. At least they're not in that particular song. But I still like Peter, Paul, and Mary, what can I say? Or Mary, Peter, and Paul, if you want to put it that way. Now let's listen to an article from the San Francisco Chronicle. A suit claims San Francisco violates its own policies, criminalizes homeless, by Mallory Minch. A prominent homeless rights organization and a group of unhoused people are suing San Francisco to stop encampment sweeps and police enforcement of quality of life laws that target people living on the streets. Grab them and bring them down here, please. The lawsuit alleges that the city violates state and federal laws, its own policies, and homeless individuals' rights by, quote, punishing residents who have nowhere else to go, and by seizing and destroying their belongings when clearing encampments. Sound familiar? It also argues the city's approach is ineffective and expensive, with the most recent city report estimating San Francisco spent more than $20 million in 2015 enforcing quality of life ordinances against homeless people. The ultimate goal of the lawsuit is to push the city to instead spend billions on affordable housing to provide shelter for everyone and fix its homelessness crisis, which the lawsuit says is the result of decades of failed policies and underinvestment. This is the accumulation of years of witnessing, documenting, and responding to fundamentally abusive human rights violations that unhoused people have had to experience at the very worst time in their lives, Jenny Friedenbach, head of the Coalition on Homelessness in San Francisco, the group behind the lawsuit. We hope to accomplish a dramatic shift from a city that responds to homelessness with sweeps, with confiscation of property, with criminalizing folks for being poor, to a city that is instead addressing the issue at its core through the provision of housing. Civil rights heavyweights, the American Civil Liberties Union and the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights of the San Francisco Bay Area, are representing the plaintiffs. The lawsuit is the climax of years-long clashes between the city and homeless activists who argue San Francisco's policy is to sweep people from the streets despite lacking adequate places to house them. It is also a pushback to lawsuits by private citizens demanding sweeps and moves from cities across the country to ban street camping, pitting interests of housed residents and business owners against the rights of those who are unhoused. San Francisco officials said they couldn't comment on the lawsuit and would respond in court. The city is acutely focused on expanding our temporary shelter and permanent housing options to alleviate our homelessness crisis, City Attorney's Office spokesperson Jen Quart said in response to the suit. Once we are served with the lawsuit, we will review the complaint. Mayor London Breed has touted her effort to expand shelter beds and permanent supportive housing. Still, officials estimate 20,000 people will be homeless in San Francisco over the course of this year, and demand can't keep up, despite the city having 13,299 supportive housing units and 3,571 shelter spots as of last week. That leaves them about 5,000 short. And that's, of course, a vast undercount, in my view, at least of the numbers of homeless people. City leaders say encampments are unsafe and inhumane, and San Francisco residents and businesses have pressured leaders to deal with tents and open-air drug use amid deteriorating street conditions. 4 years ago, the city created a controversial multi-department group to, quote, resolve encampments and coordinate with other departments to provide services. Activists say the group, called the Healthy Streets Operations Center, or HSOC, conducts sweeps and that police join social workers and street cleaners during operation. The lawsuit calls for HSOC to be disbanded. Breed has at times been the one contacting staff with concerns about removing homeless people. A public records request revealed she's texted the police chief to respond to someone sleeping on a bench near where she was having lunch. And she's tweeted to mobilize staff to address complaints on social media. Emails show city staff respond directly to complaints about from business owners about encampments. San Francisco, like other cities, is limited legally from enforcing a ban on sleeping outside against homeless individuals with no access to alternate shelter after a federal ruling. In the Martin versus Boise case, a judge ruled in favor of six people who were homeless who alleged that street sweeps, when there is no option of sleeping indoors, amounted to cruel and unusual punishment banned under the Eighth Amendment. The new lawsuit in San Francisco alleges the city violates Martin v. Boise, the Eighth Amendment, and California's Constitution. Data included from a Coalition on Homelessness report last year, obtained via public records requests, revealed that over a five-week period, HSOC, on average, had access to roughly half the beds it would need to offer a place to stay to everyone at that day's operation, similar to the situation at the Armory and the Overlook and 1220 River Street and elsewhere here in Santa Cruz. In other words, the city here in Santa Cruz, like in San Francisco, is lying about what's going on in order to facilitate the removal of homeless people to address the appearance concerns that they are interested in doing for so-called quality of life. HSOC in San Francisco has conducted 788 operations since January 2021, not all resulting in an encampment removal. They interacted with 7,694 people, 1,978 referrals to shelter and other services such as drug or mental health treatment, according to city's data. HSOC's service connection rate is about 30%. Officials say they have enough shelter to offer for those who accept it, given that they report the acceptance rate is roughly 1 in 3. Sometimes people turn down shelter because they already have a place to go. Over the past year, 717 people HSOC engaged in already had shelter or housing, city data shows. Advocates protest the narrative pushed by city officials that many homeless people are, quote, service resistant, unquote. They argue the city lacks enough appropriate treatment beds, supportive housing units, and shelters to meet individual needs. The supportive housing with services that does exist is often understaffed, dangerous, and decrepit, according to a recent Chronicle investigation. The lawsuit also alleges the city illegally seizes and destroys homeless people's belongings, which plaintiffs argue violates the Fourth Amendment, protecting the right to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures. They also allege it violates the 14th Amendment, which stops any state from depriving, quote, a person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. In other words, if you're going to steal their stuff, you take it to a court first. As well as violating the Americans with Disabilities Act. The lawsuit includes declarations from 25 homeless individuals, 5 Coalition on Homelessness employees, and a former employee with the city's homeless outreach team about the practices. A woman in a wheelchair said public works crews destroyed her prosthetics. A man with a heart condition lost his medications. Another man said his workers destroyed his godmother's ashes. When people lose all those things, they're in a very desperate, in very desperate situations and have very limited options, said Toro Castellano, a plaintiff who was homeless for 2 years during the pandemic and lost his MacBook Pro laptop and other items in a sweep. He filed a claim with the city and won $9,000, one among multiple successful claims by plaintiffs. HSOC officials say they give advance notice of operations to avoid people's belongings getting destroyed and bag and tag items that people can retrieve later, although advocates protest that doesn't happen. Officials also say police enforcement during their operations is extremely rare. The lawsuit seeks to stop police from enforcing laws aimed at people living on the streets and to have the court appoint a monitor to ensure the city complies.
The San Francisco Police Department issued at least 3,000 citations or arrests for homelessness-related quality of life offenses from 2018 through 2021, according to data obtained by the plaintiff's lawyers. The two main laws enforced prohibit prohibit lodging without permission. That's 647E, I believe, and they use that in Santa Cruz too. And obstructing a police officer, and that's a go-to law that police in Santa Cruz also use when they just pile on the charges and they maybe can't even find something to initially arrest someone for, particularly prevalent in homeless cases. A city report found that San Francisco spent $20.6 million in 2015 to enforce quality of life ordinances against homeless people, money plaintiffs say would be better used on affordable housing. The complaint estimates it would take $4.8 billion to build the thousands of units San Francisco says it needs. It pointed out that the city is bringing in millions through voter-approved tax Proposition C, only a fraction of which has been spent so far. Castellano told the Chronicle that police and other city workers sometimes asked him to move up to five times a week from his camping spot after housing residents called to complain. He said city workers might make nebulous shelter offers in the morning, but would only confirm later in the day what was available or not return at all. Workers told him he was ineligible for city housing based on an algorithm, he said. Castellano now lives in a housing co-op, hopes the lawsuit changes city policies. I'd love to see more supportive housing and low-income housing, and I'd like to protect people.
The good ship Irma lies at anchor in the harbor, waiting for the evening tide to bring high water. It's bound for Cuba, she must go across the Gulf of Mexico and the Caribbean Ocean. She's carrying a human cargo, waiting three good compañeros, each one burning with determination to be free. Against the distance, the Fidelistas. Courage was their only armor as they fought at Fidel's side with Che Guevara. Ten days out from Mexico, these compañeros landed on the Cuban beach, Los Colorados. And Fidel said, this year we'll see our country and its people free, or else we will be martyrs. We've only guns enough for 20. The enemy has arms aplenty. Beat him then, defeat him, and he'll keep us well supplied. Against Batista, the Fidelistas. Courage was their only armor as they fought at Fidel's side with Che Guevara. Weeks later in the Canyon del Arroyo, the People's Army number 18 compañeros, hungry, weak, but unafraid, they're learning revolution's trade of the High Sierra Maestra. And in the mountains, winds are blowing, bearing seeds of hope and sowing crops in Cuban earth, that mark of earth and victory. On compañeros to El Abero, courage was their only armor as they fought at Fidel's side with Che Guevara. They fought their way across the peak of El Turquino, joined by peasant bands and men from Santiago. They faced Batista's tanks and planes and drove them down into the plains from the High Sierra Maestra. They drove the gangsters from Las Villas straight across the Cordillera. Santa Clara fell to Che Guevara and was free.
against but the stars, the feet of the stars. Courage was their only armor as they fought at feet outside with Che Guevara. The pilot on that Cuban beach by Fidel Castro shines all the way to Tierra del Fuego. Sparks are blown upon the breeze and men rise up from off their knees when they see the night is burning. It blazes up in Venezuela, Bolivia, and Guatemala lights the road that men must go in order to be free. On compañeros, Americanos, for a people's free America, Fidel has shown the way with Che Guevara.
And that was Compañeros by with Ewan Cole and Peggy Seeger, probably from about 40 years ago. Great song about the Fidelistas. I think it was originally on Folkways Record of Contemporary Songs, which I heard in the mid or late 70s. So, meanwhile, back in the Benchlands on Tuesday, I showed up around 11:45, 11:50. By the time I walked down the stairway adjacent to the fence that was fencing off Area 3, the clock was tolling noon, and I was blocked at the bottom of the stairway by the smiling Lieutenant Jones, who refused to let me go in and help people move their stuff. And we had a bit of a colloquy about that. Various people were coming through. Jones claimed, and the police officers with him usually agree, but there was some small leeway that if you left the area with some of your stuff and went back to get more, they wouldn't let you back. And this played out much more dramatically or much more, thoroughly as the time moved along. Apparently they were eager, unlike, let's say, during the earlier phases 1 and phases 2 when they cleared out smaller numbers of people. This time they were much more militant. They would not allow people to come in even though they could, they weren't interfering with what the police and the folks trying to clear the area were doing. They were just being insistent that you hadn't gotten your stuff moved by noon on Tuesday, and therefore you are out of luck. And it just, considering the amount of stuff that people had in fact gotten together and the fact lack of places to move to, it was both unrealistic and cruel, in my view. Anyway, I then later came upon Troy, and we had this discussion or conversation. So police are warning people that if they leave, they won't be allowed to re-enter, although this means that piles are developing on the path.
So
it's all fake.
Well,
like just like they leave the garbage to pile up and then bring your garbage for 2 months and let that urinal, burnt out urinal for 3 months sitting there. You know, they made us look dirty.
It is.
They took away our showers for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and then they didn't tell anybody where they were putting them. I ain't had a shower in a month.
Nora's looking for you. Nora, she's helping move stuff out.
You know, they just don't understand how hard it is. I was so exhausted from moving last week, helping people, that I fell asleep on my brand new Obama phone, and it busted. I can't even use it, less than 24 hours, and now they won't give me another one for a month. It's ridiculous.
So, Troy, when we got together here, you were saying that you didn't see me or anyone else come to the Phase 2 demolition, right?
Right.
And that's true. I didn't show up, and I barely showed up here.
Nobody's done anything to protest or to fight for our cause besides speaking to you or going to the meetings. And it seems like it's a waste of time. Like, we're just beating the air.
That's right. That's how it seems.
You want to know the question I asked last week?
Tell me.
How many gorillas are going to die between now and Christmas because they're out in the woods and when they scream for help, some of these scumbags are raping them or hurting them, and nobody will hear them? Because my girl, before, when we left here, she told me, I said, well, why don't you scream when they're raping you? And she said, because you stop screaming when you start getting punched in the face over and over again.
Dig it.
Well, I did cook up a flyer for the day, whatever that's worth. I mean, what I do is I spread information about it.
Me too. I'm a sign maker.
Yeah. Well, you also are here, and you're kind of in the middle of it.
I'm a degree in printing technology and graphic design. 5 years college.
Yeah.
I had the money.
You guys know each other? This is Troy.
Hey.
No, I wanted to ask you, I see you doing the U-Haul.
I do not know. I just got here.
That's Whiskers.
That's
Whiskers.
Whiskers.
Yes. He's an old dude pulling that cart down there. You see him? The big monster cart.
Is it for the people
no,
here?
No, it's for him.
Because
he has all that stuff.
Oh, my God.
He was a wealthy man when he lost his home.
Oh, my God.
And now he's losing everything. He's losing what he has. Because
yes.
He don't have it in his bank. He has any bicycles and property, and he helps people. You need a tire, you need a spare part, you go to Whiskers and ask him if he can help you, and he'll help you.
Of course, now
he's a good guy.
He's choosing to leave rather than to move into the benchlands further.
Yes.
Thank you. Excuse me.
Sure, sure. Here's a flyer for you if you want it.
A copy of the mayor's letter. Corey was asking about it.
I have it somewhere. I don't have it with me.
Well, if you bring it when my megaphone's fixed next week, we will read that out loud to the people that are moving stuff. That the mayor said this and said that, and they didn't provide none of what they said. They just let us get dirty because they wouldn't pick up the garbage, and they just let us, and we couldn't do our laundry, and we couldn't take showers because at Coral Street you get 12 people a day, and there's over 500 homeless people in this county, and you get 12 people a day to take a shower. MH can you get maybe 10 people a day to take a shower, and besides that we don't have showers. It's ridiculous.
And of course,
we have one water place, and now all the bathrooms
and footbridge services is closing down.
Yep. We have no place to keep our stuff secure, and that's one of the main reasons why we go out, or these guys get so disgusted. And I see Hispanic dirty men going through the garbages and just throwing the garbage all over the place. And I yelled at them, and there's flies and nasty, and making it just disgusting. It's like it's set up. They set us up to make us look bad. Because we've been trying to clean up after ourselves. We have been trying to be...
They don't care, as you know. They don't care, Shirai.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. And we care a little, but not enough.
Well, see, one thing is people are going to die that don't need to die. And the people that die could be the person that could invent something to save the world or the ocean.
Or could be a friend. Could be a friend of yours.
Oxygen, and there's going to be water that are going to be shortage. Coming in the next 5-10 years, it's going to be oxygen and water. They're going to be most valuable substances on the planet. And that's all it comes down to. All we got time left for is to love one another and take care of one another. And all these poor people should have a home. They should have whatever they need, even if it's medical care and drug monitoring, whatever they do to do it. This is America, man.
I agree.
All of our ancestors fought and died for this country since it started.
This group that they're at right now, Robert?
Yeah.
Is the ones that have been here 2 years.
Yep.
They've only got 6 cops. They're telling 40 of us we have 20 minutes.
And this is Mama Shannon, who operated a kitchen down in the Benchlands. And she talks rather passionately about how she feels about this and how it affects her and those she knows.
I don't think all of us are going to be gone in 40 minutes. So if you want to see some injustice done, you better get some cameras down here because some injustice is going to get done.
Yep.
They're going to do something stupid to get us out of here because there's 40 of us. Look at this. From that fence line to that fence line. Tell me we're going to get all that shit out of there in 20 minutes.
But Sergeant Jones assures you, you've had a week.
A whole week. And
Lieutenant Jones.
And we've all lived there for 2 years. So if you've lived in a house that you built for 2 years, Tell me you can get out of there in a week when the cops are harassing you every 3 days.
Yeah, Jones told me when I told him that, just that. He said, I did it in a week.
How about this? How is it going to look on the news? How's it going to look?
Just doing my job.
Then the people who give the orders are to be held responsible for the orders that are foul.
That's correct. And also the people who are following them. That's true.
I ran a food pantry here for 2 years. How am I supposed to get all of my personal belongings and the food pantry's belongings out in a week when I'm being harassed and I have to move somewhere else where I can't take my belongings because I went to the shelter where they would take my dog, but they won't take my stuff. So now I have to find some form of storage, and that's hard to do when the cops are ticketing everybody who drives up to try to help us remove our stuff from here and takes photographs of them and writes down their license plate numbers, because apparently helping the homeless is now against the law as well.
Now, I didn't see anyone get ticketed, but again, I was only there for a short period of time, and I was banned from entering the area, as were other people, after noon, even though people were still trying to move their stuff out. And there was no indication that they were ready to bulldoze, at least that I could see. I think later, about 45 minutes to an hour later, they did begin to start a little bit of bulldozing at the very edge of the phase three, the very, very, very start of it. But there were people that got arrested, at least one person, Jorge, who was arrested for not leaving because he needed more time. And he was sitting on his bench. And you'll hear that description, at least the account that it's pretty outrageous in my view. But here's more. Thank you. Thank you, Shannon.
No, and their housing thing, they just got the huge grant for the artists that work with housed artists, and they just got a grant for it.
Vaguely.
I just got asked to participate because they saw a video. I'm on Facebook. If you go to Lookout, you'll see an article about five people at the benchland camps. Mama Shannon is one of those people. If you go to that videographer's Facebook page, you will find video of me doing my poetry. And I have been asked...
I heard a rumor that you are a poet.
I've been asked to participate in this project, which they just got a grant for, which is a housed artist is matched with a homeless artist, and they make a documentary about the artistic process that comes.
This is going to help your artistic process. You suffer, you see.
I know, I suffer, and therefore I'm happy. But that's not the way it works.
No,
it really.
I would imagine not. I don't know that much.
And I think I did the one about, and I know I've done this one for you before, which is, I know I don't laugh and smile as much as I cry, and I wander lost and ask why. My kids can't be by my side. Why hopes have and dreams have to die. Why men hide behind their pride. I see us all steal and deceive, making ourselves believe better you than me. If it takes a village to raise a child, where do I go to find my village? Because everything I thought I had that was good and loving, I have seen leveled and pillaged. And they tell me that being here itself is a privilege, and all I want to do is run from this place screaming. My soul is bleeding. My eyes cannot conceive what my brain has been shown. And now I know that this apathy and lack of integrity is like a disease, and it's brought us all to our knees. And that was the end of the poem for about 5 years. And then I realized something is, how long have I ever stayed down, Robert?
You seem to pop up.
So when it takes you to your knees, you must rise up again and make a stand, because I will not be a note on a priest's desk when he is taken to the chambers. I will not state that it was too late because there was no one left to speak up for me, because I will continue to speak until my voice is silenced, because there are women who died and cried out there who don't have voices to speak anymore, and as long as I have one, I'm going to keep talking until we're all heard.
I believe you.
Well, I got resentenced in March, right before my birthday. They gave the man that killed 16 women and Lisa Marie Kimmel 20 years in prison, because he's probably going to die there, instead of the death penalty. So it's okay to perpetrate acts of murder against, you know? It's ridiculous how many people go quiet and zip up their tents and turn off their music and hide when the cops walk through these camps. It makes me cry, knowing that I was raised with a woman who had numbers tattooed on the inside of her arm. You know, I'm the reason they don't require identity cards at Housing Matters, because I went to the rabbi and asked him if it was right of me to protest the fact that they wanted me to carry a card and register with the police as indigent, since the homeless and the homosexuals were the first ones they took when they came to Nazi Germany. I wanted to know if it was, as I felt, morally incorrect for me to do that, and if I shouldn't just sew a Star of David onto my shirt instead. And he showed,
sew an H on him.
And he showed up at the freaking, it was then Housing Now is what they called it then. It was right after, it was River Street, Coral Street Day Center.
Homeless Resource Center.
Yeah, homeless, which the woman dedicated the land and facilities, buildings to. If I remember the speech right, because I was standing there when she made it, a sanctuary for the homeless in perpetuity. We never agreed to change that. So in perpetuity means forever or until both parties agree otherwise. And she said in perpetuity, and I know the homeless people never agreed to change it to what it is today. I know we didn't. So I don't know how they got to change the deal. 36 board members, and most of them working for the city, probably had something to do with it.
No, how can you say that?
A change in mission statement and a change in status from nonprofit to for-profit transitional housing probably had a lot to do with it, too, which was not what that property or those buildings were intended for when they were donated. They were intended to be a refuge for homeless people during the day, and we didn't go on that campus at night because it meant 30 days off during the day, and nobody wanted to go without showers, food, and laundry for 30 days. So we didn't stay on that campus except if you were in the River Street shelter. And now it's all transitional housing.
Take care, Troy.
Which I think is a good thing. But what happened to the day center? We still, they have charging stations and they built more, but there's no laundry facilities. There's no people who get to know you and know what services to direct.
There's no storage.
There's no Betty. You know, there's no people with heart there that really care about every individual, that's what their problems are. Paul and Jean and someone who, Linda LeMaster, all stated that I wrote the best nonprofit business proposal they'd ever seen when I wrote one for a day center run for and by the homeless community in Santa Cruz. But I got put in jail for a charge I'd already served time on when I tried to submit it to city council. Literally, I had done my work release. They had told me I was out a day due to I got sick. And I made it up, so I got out the day before Thanksgiving instead of 2 days before Thanksgiving. And about 5 months later, I was arrested on a warrant because the note said I missed a day due to illness, because they check boxes. They don't write how many days. They check boxes. And nobody bothered to count the checked boxes. They just saw the note that said missed a day due to illness. And I told Trog...
Don't be too strict.
I told Trog when he arrested me on Coral Street, I said, you see everybody standing around right now? They all know where my camp is. I have 2 motorbikes, a tent, a bunch of personal belongings. I've lived there, you know, off and on, what, 6, 5 years now? He goes, yeah, solid for the last 3 that I know of. I said, everything I own will be gone by the time I get out. And I already served my time on this charge, Trog. Please don't do this. And he took me to jail anyway. It was a 4-day weekend. I didn't go to court. I was in jail for 6 days. When I went into court, the judge said, well, she only owed a day on her work release. We'll give her time served and release her. And I turned to my lawyer. I said, I'm not taking a deal. And she goes, why? I go, because I did my work release. I did it the whole time. And she goes, let me check. And then she goes, Your Honor, could I ask you to do me a favor? And the judge goes, what would that be? And she goes, would you count along with me with the check boxes? I just want to see. And the judge goes, okay. And they went, 1, 2, 3, 4. And then the judge goes, wait a minute, 14? She was sentenced to, you didn't miss a day, did you, Miss Musk? I said, no, I've been trying to tell you guys that for 6 days. She goes, I'm sorry, you have the court's apologies. And I ordered the sheriff to release you immediately at 4 a.m. with a tank top and shorts. The sheriff let me out.
Oh, it's warm weather, for heaven's sake.
And you might want to give the lawyer that recording, because that's what he's
going to. Everybody will hear it.
To write an affidavit about.
Thank you, man.
And that is it for this edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. We'll be
perhaps back again on Sunday. I've got some more audio, and not particularly encouraging audio, but still maybe educational audio. We're also going to hear a little bit from a bootleg version of a Phil Oakes song I've never heard, which you might enjoy. Not the best recording, but you take what you can get. Also want to remind you that the next demolition date for Phase 4, it's either Tuesday noon on the 4th or Wednesday noon on the 5th of October. I'm not sure which. I'm getting different stories. Still isn't clear. It's not posted on the city's website. The last homelessness report on that site from the erstwhile Matt Huffaker, the city mangler, is, I guess, it was early September. So he hasn't been keeping up too much, although his bulldozers are there doing the bulldozing, and the claw is crushing the tents. So that much continues business as usual. Get in touch with me if you have more you want to pass on, if you want to offer to help. If you are particularly interested in some sort of a legal response to this, we need to put together a team, and so far I don't see anybody doing it, myself included, but I am willing to help if others want to. So call me at 831-423-4833, and who knows, maybe we'll inspire each other. And that was You Can't Get Stoned Enough from a 1963 bootleg, so-called non-political masterpiece. You can find that online. Just look for it on YouTube. You can also find the chords if you want to try playing it yourself on guitar. And actually, here's another one from the same, looks like the same collection, called Just One of Those Days.
Yeah. You know, I woke up this morning and my head was sore from too many good times from the night before. So I got out of bed and I stumbled on the floor, and I had to say, my car, and the weather was cold, and she wouldn't start. You know, with two flat tires, you can't go far. So I had to say, just one of those days, just one of those years, just one of those lifetimes. And then somebody pushed me, said, get out of my way. I didn't do no crime, but I had to say, you know, I whistled at a girl, she ran the other way, and I had to say, just one of those days, just one of those years, just one of those lifetimes. You know, I woke up this morning and my head was sore from too many good times from the night before. And I stumbled on the floor, and I had to say, just one of those days, just one of those years, just one of those lifetimes.
And finally, kind of an old favorite, The Highwayman by Phil Oakes.
Was a torrent of darkness among the gusty trees. The moon was a ghostly galleon tossed upon cloudy seas, and the road was a ribbon of moonlight over the purple moor. And the highwayman came riding, 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 yes, the highwayman riding up to the old inn door. Over the cobbles he clattered and clashed in the darkened yard. And he tapped with his whip on the window, but all was locked and barred. So he whistled a tune to the window, who should be waiting there but the landlord's black-eyed daughter. Yes, the landlord's daughter, plaiting a dark red love knot into her long black hair. One kiss, my body, sweetheart, for I'm after prize tonight. But I shall be back with the yellow gold before the morning light. Yet if they press me sharply, carry me through the day. Oh, then look for me by moonlight. Watch for me by moonlight, and I'll come to thee by moonlight, though hell should bar the way. He did not come at the dawning. No, he did not come at the noon. And out of the tawny sunset, before the rise of the moon, when the road was a gypsy's ribbon, looping the purple moor, oh, a redcoat troop came marching, marching, marching. King George's men came marching up to the old inn door, and they bound the landlord's daughter with many a sniggering jest.
And they bound the musket beside her with a barrel beneath her breast. Now keep good watch, and they kissed her. She heard the dead man say, "Whoa, look for me by moonlight. Watch for me by moonlight, and I'll come to thee by moonlight, though hell should bar the way. Look for me by moonlight, hoofbeats ringing clear. Watch for me by moonlight, were they deaf that they did not hear? For he rode on the gypsy highway. She breathed one final breath, then her finger moved in the moonlight. Her musket shattered the moonlight, and it shattered her breast in the moonlight, and warned him with her death. Oh, he turned, he spurred on to the west. He did not know who stood, out with her black hair a-flowing down, drenched with her own red blood. No, not till the dawn had he heard it, and his face grew gray to hear how Bess, the landlord's daughter, landlord's black-eyed daughter, had watched for her love in the moonlight and died in the darkness there. Back he spurred like a madman, shrieking a curse to the sky, with a white road smoking behind him and his rapier brandished high. Blood red were his spurs in the golden moon, wine red his velvet coat, when they shot him down on the highway, down like a dog on the highway, and he lay in his blood on the highway, with a bunch of lace at his throat. And still of a winter's night, they say, when the wind is in the trees, when the moon is a ghostly galleon tossed upon cloudy seas, when the road is a ribbon of moonlight over the purple moor, oh, the highwayman comes riding, riding, riding. Yes, the highwayman comes riding up to the olden door.
You can see that's hungry.